And welcome back to another edition, or another episode, I should say, of the Locked On College Football Podcast. I am your host, Jordan Reed, alongside Jonah Tolles, and we are the Locked On College Football Podcast, one of the best duos, I would say, not only in the country, but also in the world as well. There isn't any other place that I would rather be, but alongside my terrific co-host, Jonah. How's everything going today, man?
Man, you really put an emphasis on the "we are," like we're Penn State or something. Goodness gracious. Speaking of Penn State, we had some intriguing pass rusher declare for the draft over the weekend. And then we have Penn State in the latest college football playoff rankings. Hint, hint at what we're going to be talking about today.
Definitely. And you've already given away the secret. That's what we are going to be talking about in the second segment of today's show. So what's happening now is that we're at the point of the year where we're starting to see underclassmen declare for the 2020 NFL Draft. We've already seen guys like Laviska Shenault, Jalen Reagor, and even Yetur Gross-Matos. Those will be three guys that we discuss in the second half of today's show. But for the first half, we're going to talk about the college football playoff rankings. And they're kind of was pretty much the same for the most part, but there was a big shakeup as far as the mid teams, I should say, from 10 to 20, but just going through the top 10, Ohio State at 1, LSU at 2, Clemson at 3, Georgia at 4, Utah at 5, Oklahoma at 6, Baylor at 7, Wisconsin at 8, and rounding it out at 9 is Florida and Penn State at 9 and 10. But the biggest surprise, and this is something that we talked about prior to recording the show, and that's Alabama at 12. It's just weird seeing them there just because we haven't seen a college football playoff without the Crimson Tide so far, and that is going to happen this year. They did struggle down the backstretch, especially after losing to Tagovailoa. They had the loss to Auburn last week as well in the Iron Bowl. So just your overall thoughts on the college football playoff rankings and, of course, Alabama at 12.
Yeah, man, Alabama at 12 is kind of surprising just because we know how much Alabama has meant to the college football playoff since its inception. So this is a little bit of a surprise, but at the same time, I mean, what else is the committee going to do? The committee has shown in, you know, recent weeks and even recent years that up until obviously selection show, they're going to be, everything's so recent to them. Like Alabama losing to Auburn, all of a sudden they're down. They're worse than Penn State and Florida. Well, in all actuality, they're just a better team than both the Gators and the Nittany Lions. And so I think this is more so just a statement from the committee just saying, hey, you know, we witnessed the Iron Bowl results. And we're going to put Auburn over Alabama. And there's nothing more than that, really. I mean, I don't know what Alabama fans – if Alabama fans were griping that they should be, you know, towards where Wisconsin and Baylor are, I mean, sure, if you look at the eye test, sure you are. You're one of the top eight best teams in the country, I still think. But at the same time, I mean, you can't expect to go to the – you know, college football playoff when you lose your star quarterback and you lose a game that you needed to win. Because you know you're not going to be in the SEC championship because you lost to LSU. You need to win that Iron Bowl game to get your ticket to the college football playoff, and you lost. So like everybody, you know, clamoring for eight teams in the college football playoff. Well, Alabama lost their first round game in the 8-team playoff. That was to Auburn. So it's, you know, it's one of those things where I know Alabama fans are frustrated at what's going on right now, but at the same time, you can't expect to be in that upper echelon of teams anymore when you lose your quote-unquote playoff game already in the Iron Bowl against Auburn.
And it's understandable why our Alabama fans are frustrated, just because they are a bit spoiled. They don't understand what it is to be or how it feels to be on the outside looking in as far as the college football playoff. And like I talked about a little bit earlier, they just haven't been in this situation before, especially being outside the top 10. And it's just weird seeing Alabama that far back just because this is one of the blue blood programs in the country. They have a huge legacy, especially with Nick Saban and what he has brought to that program. So we'll see what does happen in the future for them. I expect them to be firmly back as a top 2 to 3 team in the country, of course, just because of the recruiting classes that they do have every single year. So they're not going to be down for long. But I did throw out a tweet.
They're going to be fine.
Absolutely.
Alabama's going to be fine. Everyone's, you know, I know a lot of people rush to say, you know, could this be the end of Alabama? I don't think it will be. I think, you know, Alabama has so many five-star recruits. I know you don't follow the high school recruiting scene as much, but I don't either. But, like, I just know common sense that, like, Alabama has the number one or two recruiting class each year. Like, they're going to have always going to have talent as long as Nick Saban's there. So they'll be back. I mean, I don't think this is the end of Alabama. They'll always have talent. Jalen Waddle might be the best receiver in next year's draft, among other big defensive pieces as well. But at the same time, I mean, Alabama fans can't be upset right here, because if they beat Auburn, they pretty much lock up their college football playoff spot, because I think LSU is going to blow out Georgia in the SEC championship on Saturday. So if Alabama just beats Bo Nix in Auburn, an ineffective Auburn offense for most of the year, they beat Bo Nix in Auburn and win the Iron Bowl, they're in the college football playoff. But they just didn't get – I understand Mac Jones. You can make that argument. But Mac Jones didn't play bad against Auburn. It wasn't Mac Jones' fault they lost. So Auburn just got kicked in the mouth by Alabama just got kicked in the mouth by Auburn. And Derrick Brown, a big reason why, is the line of scrimmage battle was, you know, in Auburn's favor all game long. And that was the difference in this game. And that's why Auburn's not – and that's why Alabama's not going to be in the college football playoff. Auburn – you know, took it right to them. And Alabama fans can't be upset about that, because that's all they needed to do. I think Georgia's going to lose. So Alabama would have been in. So that was their play-in game, and they lost. So I don't know why Crimson Tide fans are so frustrated right now.
And the fourth spot really is the one that's up for grabs right now. It seems that the other three pretty much are locked in, as long as they take care of business this weekend in their respective conference championship games with Ohio State, LSU, and Clemson. Everybody expects LSU – or I should say Clemson to steamroll Virginia in the ACC championship game, as well as LSU, what they're going to do to Georgia in the SEC championship game. And everybody expects Ohio State to win in the Big Ten championship game as well, even though there are some rumors about Justin Fields and his knee not being 100%. I still think they'll be fine in that game, just because they have the talent to uplift whoever is under center in that game, and they have the defensive pieces to shut out whoever they do face against as well. So I think all those three teams will be fine, but the fourth spot is up for grabs. And I want to ask you about Utah. Just what is your overall thoughts on Utah? And they're probably going to be matched up with Ohio State in the first round of the college football playoff. That seems to be the way that it is trending right now. Do you think they have a chance against the Buckeyes if we do see that matchup?
First of all, I have this conspiracy theory, and you brought it up earlier. The committee does not want Utah in the college football playoff. They're just not as marketable. If a team like Oklahoma beats Baylor, I think the committee is going to view that as a better win over a team like Oregon. I think the committee will put Oklahoma with Jalen Hurts, a Heisman candidate. They think that's more marketable against Ohio State. Some people may call that, you know, just a conspiracy theory, some just fluff. But I think it's real. I think the committee will value a team like Oklahoma in there. I know people are saying, well, if Utah beats Oregon, they're in. I'm not necessarily sure. If Oklahoma convincingly beats Baylor, like they beat them by, you know, double digits, I think Oklahoma gets in over Utah, just because I think the committee just has that. Even though they say that they remove all the outside factors, I think the marketability of Oklahoma puts them over the top in that regard. But just specifically talking about this Utah team, regardless of what happens on Friday and Saturday, this Utah team's legit, man. Their defense is insanely good. I hope people don't count. If Utah indeed makes it, do not count out this team against a team like Ohio State. Because Ohio State hasn't played a defense like that. I know they played a team like Michigan. They've played teams like Wisconsin. They have not played a defense like this Utah team yet. Bradley and I believe he's a Pac-12 leader in sacks. You have two safeties going to the Senior Bowl in Terrell Burgess and Julian Blackman. You have, a first-round corner in Jalen Johnson. And you have a couple of linebackers going in the pre-draft cycle as well. So this is a really, really good Utah team. I can't mention Utah without talking about Leki Fotu in the middle of the defensive line as well. So the Utah team has about six or seven NFL guys on it. And you can't say that for most of the teams in college football. I don't even know if you can say that for most teams in the playoff this year. So it's going to be really interesting to see how Utah matches up with one of these blue blood programs. Because I think Utah has something to prove, and their defense is ready to play.
Tyler Huntley, the quarterback, I'm really impressed by what he has done this year as well. And, of course, we'd be remiss if we did not mention Zach Moss in that backfield as well. So they have some notable names on both sides of the ball. You talked about the defense and, of course, the offense as well, some of the names that I just mentioned. Utah does have some star power, so it's going to be interesting to see exactly how the committee feels if they do end up beating Oregon this weekend, which a lot of people are expecting them to do. And then Oklahoma with Baylor. We've already seen how the first game went between both of those programs. It was a very, very good game. that went down to the last moments where they had to overcome a huge deficit in order to beat Baylor. But a lot of people are expecting a different result this time around just because of the circumstances and the things that are at hand for the Oklahoma Sooners. And I'm right there with you. The college football playoff is all about money and revenue, and there just isn't a lot of notable names as far as to the public for star power from Utah. But if you get like Jalen Hurts and CeeDee Lamb in there, those are very marketable names that everybody knows for the most part. So I think if Oklahoma does have a convincing win over Baylor, I think without question they're going to get into the college football playoff over Utah. Unfortunately, that's just how the ship sails. That's just how it goes as far as, you know, money and revenue and star power. That's what this committee wants, just because they want to make revenue off of this product. And we know how the NCAA is. That's what it's all about. They want to generate profit and revenue, and star power definitely does drive revenue for the most part. So I do expect that to happen. And just remember where you heard that theory first. It was Jonah Tulls. So far, I love your listeners. When you do see that happen and the committee does that, you know exactly where you heard it from first. It was Jonah's conspiracy theory. So with that being said, I want to remind the listeners about DoorDash. Treat yourself to the meal you deserve and have your favorite restaurants come to you with DoorDash. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off the first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code LOCKEDON. Listening on the go, if you can't visit DoorDash right now, you can find this in all other offers from Locked On sponsors at LockedOnPodcast.com/offers.
So, hey, Jordan,
let's
talk about some implications here. I know we talked a little bit briefly on Oklahoma and, you know, Utah and whatnot. Well, let's talk about some of these other teams. And I know there's only two other really teams that can, you know, make some noise here. And it's other two teams in the, you know, championship weekend, Baylor and Wisconsin. I had the same theory with Wisconsin and Baylor. I think Wisconsin, so this is a crazy deal. Obviously, Wisconsin will have to pull up a massive upset against Ohio State to get in. But even then, people will think they're on the outside looking in because they're number eight. But my question to you is, does a two-loss Wisconsin team, like a Big Ten, the Big Ten champion, two-loss Wisconsin team, do they get in over, let's say, if Baylor beats Oklahoma and Utah beats Oregon? Does Wisconsin get in over those two teams?
I don't think they would get in over Baylor, just because I don't think there's any way they could really. Well, I guess you could. Yeah. Let me go back.
That's what
I think. Just looking back at it now. Just think about it now. Yeah, they could. It's very possible.
Yeah,
and it seems like unlikely that they would jump four spots, but I think so. If they were to go out and beat Ohio State convincingly, the top team in the country, and maybe possibly even knocking Ohio State out of the college football playoff. Now, I don't think that would happen.
That won't happen.
I don't think that would happen.
There's too much star power on the Ohio State team for them to kick them out. You know, we all think the college football playoff's all about money. They're not kicking Ohio State's a lock. What I think what could happen is, obviously, it would take a big upset for Wisconsin to pull this off. But I think Wisconsin gets in over even if Utah beats Oregon Friday night, and then if Baylor – this all is predicated on LSU beating Georgia, of course, and Baylor beating Oklahoma. Because I think if Oklahoma beats Baylor, I think they're in regardless, obviously, if Georgia loses. Because I think they're too marketable. Jalen Hurts, Heisman candidate, CeeDee Lamb, Biletnikoff, that they're going to get in if they take care of business. But if Baylor wins and Utah wins and Georgia loses, Wisconsin can get in if they beat Ohio State. Because Ohio State is the number one team in the land. Everyone's going to be watching that game, prime time, Big Ten football. If Wisconsin beats the number one team in the nation, people are going to take notice. That is a bigger win than Utah beating Oregon. That's a bigger win than Baylor beating Oklahoma. I'm telling you. Wisconsin will get in if they beat Ohio State and those things happen. But it's a lot of things. But let me tell you, Wisconsin fans, you still have a dog in this fight.
Yeah.
Don't give up. I'm telling you, Wisconsin has a chance.
The fourth spot, there's just so many possibilities that could happen there, especially with Georgia most likely losing. But, of course, since we're saying that what's going to happen is Georgia is somehow going to end up blowing out LSU.
Dude, that would be insane.
Yeah, it would.
It would go against all logic.
It would. That'll be interesting to see exactly what happens with that. But I think definitely Ohio State and LSU are locks. And if Clemson does somehow lose to Virginia, which I don't think there's any
Yeah,
chance of that happening.
the top three teams are locked in. I mean,
Yeah, I think
they're
so
all
too.
undefeated for all the whole year, regular season champions. I mean, Clemson, like I said, we all think the college football playoff's all about money. Like we, they're not lying to us. They're not hiding anything from us. We know this. They've done it in
Right.
years past. We know what they're about. They can fool us by putting Oklahoma behind Utah. Oklahoma is definitely above Utah when it comes to selection day, let me tell you.
Right.
It's because Jalen Hurts and those boys. But Clemson's not going to get out of these Trevor Lawrence. Ohio State's not getting out regardless. They got Justin Fields and those boys. And LSU with Joe Burrow, obviously, they're not getting out either. So, like, it's all about star power. And then, you know, if Georgia loses, then that opens the door for the Oklahomas, the Baylors, Wisconsins, and the Utahs.
Definitely. It's going to be interesting to see exactly what happens with that fourth spot. And I can't wait to come back on the podcast on Monday just to talk about exactly what happened. I'm sure there's going to be something crazy for us to talk about. But I want to move on and get to our next segment just because I love comparing our notes and just our overall thoughts on some of these prospects. So what's happening now is that we're starting to see some underclassmen declare for the 2020 NFL draft. And there's going to be three guys that we focus on today for the most part. And there's going to be other guys that we get to later on in the week and in later episodes as well. So the three that we're going to focus on today are Colorado wide receiver Laviska Shenault, TCU wide receiver Jalen Reagor, and Penn State edge rusher Yetur Gross-Matos. So with that being said, I want to go back to the top and I want to talk about Colorado receiver Laviska Shenault, a guy that I'm a huge fan of, but I think you have to have a little bit of buyer beware with him just because he is a bit raw. And he reminds me of a guy like Cordarrelle Patterson in a sense. Now, I think he's a much better receiver as far as polished than what Cordarrelle Patterson was coming out. But the similarities that I see with them is that they have to have some way to get manufactured touches just because they aren't overly great route runners and they're still trying to figure out exactly how to be better in that department, I should say. Shenault isn't overly aggressive or great route runner in a sense, but he has gotten better at it over time. And I thought he was a bit misused prior to this year. They treated him like an H-back in a sense just because of his frame and his strength and how he wins in certain situations. But this year, he's been more in that receiver role. And I was really happy to see that just because he was able to show a bit more as far as what he could do out in the perimeter and also on the slot. But he has battled some injuries. He's had three surgeries to date, I believe so far, that so there is a little bit of durability concerns there as far as some injuries stacking up there. But he has showed a lot of promise this year, and I'm really happy to see how they did use him this year as opposed to an H-back in a sense when the coaching staff change did happen there. So just your overall thoughts on Shenault, and do you just see him as a first-round prospect right now?
Yeah, I think I do. I think the NFL does as well. I think the NFL sees him in that top five wide receiver conversation. And we've talked about this before. I think the wide receiver class is going to stretch this year just because of the depth. I don't think you're going to see guys like the Alabama guys or Shenault go in the top 12 as much as we're seeing them mocked just because the depth of the position. I know elite players will get drafted, you know, in high positions. But at the same time, you know, I think the depth of this class will, you know, cause NFL GMs to focus on other positions in the first round. So you can see guys like Laviska Shenault drop to the second round, but make no mistake, I think the NFL views him really highly. And you know, if you're not a Cowboys fan, you may not get this comparison. I mean, because when you talk about Dez Bryant, you think of this hulking wide receiver on the outside who was, you know, just a monster, and he was. But some of the best moments where the Cowboys got the best production out of Dez Bryant was in the slot. And I don't think a lot of non-Cowboys fans know that. I think a lot of he wasn't a great route runner. And so what you needed to manufacture touches to him. And that's whenever Dez Bryant, whenever he started breaking down health-wise, and he wasn't as fast. This is the guy that you needed to give him the ball. Just put the ball in his hands and let him go to work. And that's what they did early on with Dak Prescott. So I see Shenault kind of the same kind of way. Unrefined route runner. He's not going to blow by you speed-wise. But at the same time, this guy has elite play strength, just uncanny kind of like that agility for someone his size. I think he's the best run after catch wide receiver in this class. I mean, this guy just has just a, you know, he is a contact balance, the power. This guy is just, there's a reason why he's been used as an H-back at Colorado because sometimes he's the best running back on that team. So, I mean, he obviously doesn't face many reps, you know, running against complex, multifaceted routes against man coverage. And most of his production comes from simple screens, stops, crosses, and verticals. So, like, for me, it's going to be buyer beware. But similar to how, you know, the Cowboys are using Dez Bryant later on in his Dallas career, I think a team can use Chenault as, like, a versatile option in the slot, at the X, and the goal line. You can be really creative with Chenault. I think Chenault's going to be one of the most versatile receivers in this class, and that'll help him a lot. I like your Cordarrelle Patterson comparison, too. Coming out of Tennessee is kind of the same sort of thing with Patterson. It was like, well, he's kind of raw coming out, but just give him the ball and we'll figure it out. Obviously, it didn't work out with Cordarrelle Patterson on offense, but, I mean, he's become a really good special teams player lately. But, I mean, with Patterson coming out of Tennessee, it was like, just give him the ball and we'll figure it out later. That's kind of how I feel with Chenault. Like, Chenault, you can play him in the outside, you can play him in the slot. Heck, line him up at running back in the goal line. Like, I'll just give him the ball and he'll make plays. The buyer beware, obviously, is that transition to NFL speed and NFL man coverage. That's why he won't go above guys like Judy, Ruggs, and CeeDee Lamb.
And the thing with Chenault is that I'm a big fan of his game, but I definitely could see a situation where he does flame out if he does go to the wrong spot, just because he has a very versatile skill set and a very unique skill set and playing style as well. And it's going to take a creative offensive coordinator in order for him to flourish. So that's why I said it's a little bit of a buyer beware with him. And every team is not going to be for him, just because you have those teams that are a bit stubborn and they really like to stick to their scheme and they don't really like to, you know, cater to certain guys as far as manufacturing them touches and just figuring out ways they can get them the ball and allowing them to figure it out as they go. But that's, like you said, that's what you have to do with Chenault, just because he is so good after the catch. And I posted a clip of him in the Air Force game, just where it shows just how well he is after the catch. And I think that's one of the best things that he does bring to the table. He has elite contact balance, like you said, and very good strength as well at the catch point. So keep an eye on Chenault. I'll be really excited to see exactly where he does end up going in the draft, but we are a long way away from that. And I think he's another guy that is going to blow up at the combine as well, just because I think he's going to run fast and he's going to test really well for the most part as well, just because he looks like a 4.4 guy on film, especially straight line. And I expect him probably to test in the high 4.4s as far as the 40, rocked up body. So I expect him to test very well as far as the bench press and other areas as well. So I'm excited to see exactly how he does test and how well he does look running routes at the combine and also his pro day. Did you have anything else to add to Chenault?
Yeah, I think one thing that you can say positive for Chenault in terms of his draft projection is that the NFL values upside the most at wide receiver. We've seen it years past with your first round guys, Corey Coleman, John Ross. I mean, you're talking about guys who just can stretch the field, guys who offer more upside than kind of like, you know, we've seen guys like Jalen Strong fall. We've seen guys like DK Metcalf fall. We've seen, you know, Michael Thomas fall in recent drafts, Tyler Boyd. So, like, it's just one of those things where, like, I think the NFL is going to value LaVisca Chenault's upside and versatility more than draft Twitter will. So I think the good news for Chenault is I think the NFL will value him extremely high compared to where you'll see on Twitter in the next few months.
Definitely agree with that, especially in the upside department. NFL teams and evaluators definitely love upside, I should say, especially with receivers. But before we move on and we finish our final segment with TCU wide receiver Jalen Reagor and Penn State edge rusher Yetur Gross-Matos, here's a quick word from our sponsors. All right, and we are back talking about TCU wide receiver Jalen Reagor. A guy that kind of has been all over the place as far as projections. We've seen him in the first round of some mocks early on, and then he kind of dwindled a little bit just because he did struggle with some injuries and also some drops as well. But he's finished very strong during the back half of the year, and now you're starting to see him get some first-round discussions once again. He had a really good game last week where he did get a punt return for a touchdown, and also he had a receiving touchdown as well. So he's starting to get that first-round luster again. And he's starting to get that first round love back, I should say. But you talk about explosiveness. He does bring that to the table. An overly good route runner. I think he gets kind of dinged wrongly for that as being just a speed demon as far as a vertical guy or just manufactured touches as far as screens and things of that nature. But he's a pretty good route runner from what I've seen. It's just a matter of asking him to run those certain routes. So Jalen Reagor, I'm a big fan of him. I love the explosiveness that he brings to the table. I think he's lightning in a bottle, and any type of offensive coordinator would love to have him just because he can go from 0 to 60 in a split second, and he can break games open in a split second as well. So just your overall thoughts on Rager and if you would be comfortable with selecting him early.
It depends on the team and the scheme. I think it depends more on the scheme for Rager than Chenault. I think Chenault you can kind of plug in anywhere, whereas Rager, I think you kind of have to have a specific role for him. You kind of say, okay, are you going to be our deep threat? Are you going to be our slot? It's going to be, you know, a little more defined for him. So I think a certain team could take him first round, 100%. I think because you look at him physically, I think he's Tyreek Hill physically. I think you look at his, you know, just his size, his explosiveness, his ability to return punts, his speed. He's one of the two or three fastest players in college football, and he has that kind of speed to where he gets the ball, he's a house call, you know, waiting to happen. So I think physically he has that Tyreek Hill potential to be a game breaker. But I think right now, I think just, you know, in terms of his refinement and technique, he's almost like Travis Benjamin, you know, where he has Tyreek Hill's physical attributes, but he has the receiver attributes right now, like a guy like Travis Benjamin, who isn't the best player at the catch point, who is, you know, a little unrefined route-wise. You don't really trust him to go one-on-one in man coverage with a full route tree. I think Rager will develop into a good route runner, kind of like how Tyreek Hill developed into a great route runner in Kansas City. When Hill first arrived at Kansas City, he was more just a vertical guy. Now Hill can, you know, run any route in the route tree. So I think Rager has potential to do that. He has the speed, he has the quickness, he has a change of direction to really become a really good route runner. We just haven't seen much of that yet. So it might take him a little more time. I think maybe a year or two before he develops that kind of confidence as a route runner. But right now, I think he's Tyreek Hill. You know, I think he's Tyreek Hill right now with Travis Benjamin's kind of intangible. So I think if a team can, you know, bank on that and bet on that and figure it out, that he's going to be a really good pro because of his game-breaking ability.
So here's the comparison that I wrote down for Rager. And I use this comparison also in my prospects to pros comparison article that I did a couple weeks ago when I was talking about receivers. I wrote down Curtis Samuel for Jalen Rager. And he reminds me a lot of Samuel, just because if you remember, Samuel wasn't an overly great route runner coming out of Ohio State. I should say. They used him more as far as manufactured touches on these jet sweeps, these screens that they saw on the perimeter, also out of the slot. And he played kind of the Paris Campbell role last year. I think that's a very similar comparison as far as how they utilized him. But as you've seen with the Carolina Panthers, he's evolved and he's become more of a great overly route runner and well-rounded route runner, I should say. And I think that's the kind of things we can't see out of Rager, just because he does come out of his comfort zones a little bit with TCU, and he kind of experiments a bit as far as what he can do. But he still is kind of trying to finagle exactly with what he can do out on the perimeter, and he really shows to himself, like, oh, man, I can do some of the stuff that they might not necessarily ask me to do consistently. It's just a matter of getting with the team that can use me in those certain ways. So that's why I compared him to Curtis Samuel.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the biggest things that's going to be in my scouting report on Jalen Rager is better college player than – or better pro than college player.
Yeah.
That's going to be the biggest thing with him. And I think a lot of people are going to miss on Jalen Rager and kind of, you know, they're going to really highlight his weaknesses more than they should because of that. I think a lot of people are stuck in their ways. And I'm talking about people in the scouting community. And that's whether that's NFL or Twitter or whatever it may be. A lot of people are stuck in their ways saying, well, players can't improve from college to NFL. And that's why I think they miss on a lot of players, and myself included. I will knock a guy because I don't think he's ready to play, and all of a sudden he learns a lot, kind of like Brian O'Neill. I mean, just, you know, I had like a fifth or sixth round grade on him. So it's one of those things where it's like a player can get better. So I think people need to acknowledge that. And I think Rager is going to be a prime example of that once he gets to the NFL. Because you explained him beautifully. I mean, Curtis Samuel is a great comparison. This is a guy that, you know, wasn't asked to do a lot coming out of Ohio State and really developed into a really good route runner for the Panthers. He has that thick, kind of sturdy frame, but he also still has the long speed and explosiveness to take any play to the house. That's kind of like Rager, because Rager has some sneaky, like, physicality to his game. Like, if you try, you know, arm tackling him, he's not going down. This guy has, you know, elite contact balance for a guy his size. And that reminds me a lot of Curtis Samuel in those regards, too. And obviously, you know, Samuel was a great punt returner at Ohio State. Same thing with Rager at TCU. So I think Rager is going to – I think some teams are going to fall in love with Rager. Now, a lot of teams may not like his skill set, because I think some teams may think he's a one-trick pony. But I think one team – maybe a team that just, you know, banks on his long speed, like maybe New Orleans Saints, for example – be looking for a receiver, you know, with Michael Thomas, or the Green Bay Packers looking to add some speed with Davante Adams over there. So some team's going to bank on him. I just don't know which one it's going to be.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm excited to see exactly which team does end up falling in love with him, just because you talk about a guy that is going to rip up the turf at the combine. He is going to burn up the turf in Indianapolis, just because I expect him to run in the low 4.3s, and he might even touch 4.2 just because he runs that fast on film. And I think he's going to have one of the faster times of anybody in this class. I think him and Henry Ruggs III are probably going to be the two guys that are definitely in the top two or three discussions as far as the fastest 40 times at the combine, not only for receivers, but overall in this class as well. So
I'll give you a sleeper team to watch here with Jalen Reagor. And I know it's my team. It's the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say this, you have Randall Cobb looked to go into free agency. I don't think the Cowboys are going to retain him. And then you have Amari Cooper, the whole situation around him. I think they might end up franchising Cooper if they can't get him a long-term deal. And I'm not saying they're going to let Cooper walk. They traded a first-round pick for him. They're going to do everything they can to keep him. But if this Cowboys offense really believes in Dak Prescott, they give him that big money, you're going to have to surround them with playmakers that are cheap, because now you're going to have to, you know, you don't have the money to sign, you know, big-name guys no more. You're going to have to give him, you know, help around. I know Gallup's developed a big guy, but Reagor can fit right into that slot position and really give him that big play, some more big play ability. And, you know, Dallas doesn't have to spend the pre-draft visit on Reagor, because Dallas is a big advantage more so than other teams with Dallas Day. It's kind of a local pre-draft kind of event for a lot of, like, the local kids, like, you know, SMU, TCU. It's in a small radius, you know, sometimes even Baylor. But Reagor fits into that. And so Dallas will have plenty of homework on Reagor, so that they don't have to spend a pre-draft visit on him, but they'll sure be there for him, you know, and, you know, in all the pre-draft cycle, combine, pro days, and they'll have him in for Dallas Day. So they'll have their homework done on Jalen Reagor. So if they like him a lot, then don't be surprised if the Cowboys spend their first-round pick on him, because you can be sure they'll have their homework done on Reagor.
And I actually like that fit a lot, just because the Cowboys need some speed on the perimeter. And I like Amari Cooper. I like Michael Gallup. Mike Gallup is a guy that I really did like a lot pre-draft. But Randall Cobb, we'll see what does happen with that. The Tavon Austin experiment really didn't go as planned. But you talk about a significant upgrade and a long-term option in Reagor over Tavon Austin, and adding that type of speed and dynamic not only to the wide receiver course, but also in the special teams department as well, as a group, I should say, that has been a disaster for the Cowboys this year.
Oh, my God.
Just from afar, I've noticed that special teams has been a disaster for the Cowboys.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, the Cowboys are a very reactionary team. They will draft based on how they did that year, and, like, they'll go overhaul on it. They did it 2 years ago with the cornerback. They did it with Taco. They did it with DeMarcus Lawrence. I mean, this team, if they find a weakness, they will, like, overhaul it in the offseason. That's just what they do. They can kill two birds with one stone. They tried doing it with Adoree Jackson the year they drafted Cheeto and Jordan Lewis. They wanted corners. They needed special teams. They wanted Adoree for both. They end up getting Taco. But, I mean, we know how that went. a guy like Reagor can kind of fill both sides. He can be your long-term slot, your big play threat, and your punt return. He immediately becomes, I think, one of the best punt returns in the NFL. And this guy bolsters your special teams unit right away. So I really do believe the Cowboys are going to love Jalen Reagor. And the Cowboys, like I said, are a sleeper team, because they're probably going to have more homework on Reagor than any other team in the NFL.
Without question, especially with him being right there. But before we finish up with our last prospect and Yetur Gross-Matos, we're going to take another quick break. And here's a quick word from our sponsors. All right, so we are back, and we are debating our final prospect of the night, and that is Penn State edge rusher Yetur Gross-Matos. And I'm going to let you go first on this, just because I have my thoughts about him, and I've had him in the first round of my mock draft for quite some time, but I do have some questions about him. So I'm going to open up the floor to you, and I just want to get your overall thoughts on him and just where you see him going forward.
Traits, and more traits. This guy has everything you would want in a pass rusher physically. You look at him, he passes the eye test. He has the size. He has the length. He has an excellent combination of speed to power he plays with. You know, he's not the bulkiest kind of player and power at the point of attack in the run game, but this is a guy who uses his length very well as a pass rusher. I think he knows he's long and he knows he's explosive. He has a good first step. This guy's a combination of a toolbox of pass rush moves. And while this guy, you know, I don't think he understands, you know, certain angles yet of, you know, bend and getting over the top, you know, around the arc. But this is a guy that I think has a variety of ways where you can win. I think it makes him really unpredictable as a pass rusher. So as a pass rusher, I think this guy is going to be, you know, has double-digit potential at the next level. The question with him is going to be the three-down aspect, him being able to handle, you know, offensive tackles at the point of attack, one-on-one, the run game. Can he two-gap? It's going to be interesting to see where a team places him. I think a lot of these 3-4 teams, maybe a team like Arizona in the second round, I think they would love him. You got a team like Baltimore. You're going to have – I think he's going to be viewed more as like a – kind of like how Brian Burns was viewed last year. Brian Burns fell because I think a lot of teams didn't view him as a three-down defensive end. I think most teams view him as kind of like an outside linebacker that you rush situationally. And it's almost similar to like how Harold Landry is viewed by the Titans 2 years ago too, how Harold Landry fell. So Gross Models might fall a little more than I previously thought just because I think some teams may view him in a limited capacity. And we've seen those like defensive end outside linebacker guys who are a little, you know, I guess thinner framed. Those guys fall down a little more than we expected. But don't get me wrong, Yetur Gross Matos has incredible traits, and this guy has, in fact, top 15 traits. The problem with him is going to be, can he prove that he is a three-down guy? And I just don't think his tape has shown that, despite his, you know, I think his incredible pass rush potential.
I think you hit the nail on the head as far as his three-down potential. And that's really the thing that really scares me the most about him, just because his run defense is really lacking right now. And if you go back and watch him against Ohio State, that's the one game that really did worry me with him, just because he wasn't able to generate any type of push as far as a run defender. And he gets turned so easily when he does have to set the edge. And he doesn't set a hard edge for the most part. Teams are really able to circle the defense a lot of times with him, and that just really worries me with him. But as far as traits, I think you're spot on with that. He does have all the traits that you're looking for. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons why he will end up being a first rounder, just because he has some things that you cannot teach. He already has plenty of tools in the tool shed as far as what he has as a pass rusher. He has the explosiveness and the bend that you're looking for. He's very well diverse with his hand-to-hand combat and some of the moves that he is able to employ. I think he's very skilled with that. I would like to see him develop a more consistent counter move, but that's an easy fix and something that can come with a demanding position coach over time. But just the way he's able to get up the field, his bend, and his natural ability as a pass rusher, he has some things that you cannot teach. And I don't think he's quite as explosive as Brian Burns, but he definitely has some of those traits that you look for as far as being a pass rusher from day one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said, he passes the eye test immediately. He's one of those guys that gets off the bus like, okay, that's a guy.
And absolutely.
Yetur Gross Matos, this guy, I think, is going to have a great pre-draft cycle in terms of athletic testing and just kind of, like I said, the eye test, first impression kind of guy. I think what a lot of people are missing about Yetur Gross Matos is, you know, that he was suspended. He had some off-field issues early on in before the season started. So I think some teams are going to have some background to go into on in his interviews and his pro days. So that could be something to watch in the pre-draft cycle for him. But I think athletically and the physical profile, there's really no questions with that. I think, you know, he has everything you want. See, and this is the problem with Yetur Gross Matos. I don't think he's necessarily weak. I think this guy has decent play strength to the point of attack. It's just a matter of him. I just don't think he's just a sound run defender. I don't think he understands gap discipline. I don't think he's a guy that really, you know, wants it hard enough in run defense. This is a guy that I want to see. You know, I think he has the physical profile. I think he has the power to become a good run defender. It's just a matter of him, you know, I think, developing with a defensive line coach and some defensive line coach betting on him in the late first round. So it's been interesting to see where he goes with the, you know, the off field, the raw, and all those combinations built into it. But don't get me wrong, Gross Matos, I think, one of the most talented pass rushers in this draft. And I think he has double-digit sack potential at the next level.
Without question, we definitely agree upon that. But that is our show for today. And thank you guys, of course, as always, for listening. We cannot make the show possible without you guys as our loyal listeners. But we are the Locked On College Football Podcast. I am Jordan Reed. He is Jonah Tolles. We will be back tomorrow with plenty more interesting topics. But make sure to subscribe to the show. Leave a 5-star review. Tell a friend to tell a friend to listen to the podcast. We will be back tomorrow. Thank you guys again for listening.